financial literacy, and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Raham. Good morning.
Well, hello, Jess. How are you?
I love our new setup where we actually get to see each other and talk to each other in the morning rather than just over the phone.
Yeah, it's nice. I think it is nicer to see people, even if it's on a screen. And of course, my schedule prevents me from driving to the station all the time and doing the show in person. But this has worked out well for us. And so I wanted to ask you if you have been doing anything on the news about Financial Literacy Month, or does anybody talk about Financial Literacy Month?
I would say that you talk about it. Yes.
Okay, well, all right. So April is Financial Literacy Month. And Beyond Finance commissioned one poll to do a study and actually got Financial Literacy Week, Financial Practice Week.
Okay.
Added to Chase's schedule of events. Like anybody pays attention to Chase's schedule of events mm-hmm. either. But so that was just supposed to add a little more value to Financial Literacy Month. And so they had, of course, as you can imagine, a lot of boring statistics, but they do translate to how we're really feeling about our money. In other words, how do Gen Z feelers,
Gen Z feelers?
So how do Gen Zers feel about their money, you know, as opposed to maybe baby boomers?
Mm-hmm.
And what do we know? When we say financial literacy, what are we really talking about? So I don't know. I think, you know, financial literacy is so broad. Maybe some people think that means you have to learn how to balance a checkbook mm-hmm. or your bank statement. Nobody uses a checkbook anymore either, but a bank statement. And other people think that means they have to learn how to trade in the market. You know, so from my perspective, financial literacy, I think, I don't know, maybe we come up with a new term like, you know, don't be a scaredy cat, right? It's just financial literacy is just about sort of warming up to the idea of managing your money and understanding what some of the basic terms mean. But overall, really just understanding, like anything else you would want to know. You want to drive a car. You want to have some idea of how it runs. Do you need to be able to, you know, rebuild a transmission? No. But you need to understand, okay, when I get in this vehicle, these are my goals. I want to go from point A to point B, and I'm going to get there, and I'm going to go the long way, the short way. I'm mm-hmm. going to do it safely, whatever the analogy might be, right? So you have to have some framework, some boundary, some basic knowledge.
I feel like a quiz is coming. Am I getting a quiz?
No.
Okay.
No, you're not, actually. And that's kind of the point. Now, you just brought that up. I feel like something scary is going to happen to me if I look at my money.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody's going to quiz me on this. Okay, your relationship with money is private. It's your relationship with money. If you choose to share that with your partner or with a coach, that's up to you. And that is placing them in a place of honor and trust. So they should be able to speak to you in positive language about this. So if every time, okay, here's another analogy. People say to me, how do you get your cat to ride in the car so calmly? Because she rides everywhere with me, right?
Okay.
She loves it.
Where is this analogy going?
It's going to the vet. How many people can't round up their pet mm-hmm. when it's time to go to the vet? Now, why is that? Why is the dog or the cat in the car, you know, frothing at the mouth, hiding under the seat, clinging to the owner? Because the only time they take them anywhere is to the vet.
Mm-hmm.
And very often that's not always, I mean, most vets are pretty good, but
not
still,
a pleasant experience.
Pet,
yeah.
Yeah. For a pet that never goes in the car anywhere, that's not a pleasant experience. So they've associated getting in the car with having a shot or whatever. Now, that might seem like a way out there analogy, but let me tell you, it's a lot closer than you think. If every time you look at your money, it's because you're doing it, oh, something awful has just happened, I better sit down and look at my money.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the bad stuff's already happened to you. And the result is you have to now bother to look at your money, and you're probably not going to do it very well, right? You don't feel good about it, all of that.
Mm-hmm.
So just to give you some idea of this, what this lack of confidence in money translates to in the numbers, according to this poll anyway, is that only two in five people consider themselves more financially savvy than others.
Mm-hmm.
That means 3 out of 5 people think they know less than their neighbor or their friend or their partner. 3 out of 5 people are going, oh, I'm not very good with money.
That seems accurate.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. 39% admit that they procrastinate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, go figure, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
I mean, if every time you look at this, you get a bad result, it's going to get worse.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, you need to build some positive things that will help you get over these hurdles. They need to be little, but you can do it. So we're talking about healthy financial habits.
Mm-hmm.
When we talk about Gen Zers, right? Generation Z is the most likely to procrastinate at about 49%. With baby boomers, no surprise, the least likely to procrastinate at 22%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can come up with all kinds of social parameters as to why this happens. I'm going to say baby boomers have had more practice at it.
Mm-hmm.
Good, bad, or otherwise, they've had more practice at it. They've had more time to hone their skills. They've learned how to do the kinds of things we can talk about so that they're not quite so afraid and they don't procrastinate quite so much. I don't think it's that they're, you know, just better doers. It's not like they all grew up on the Nike do it now thing, right? It's just everybody procrastinates when it's something you don't want to do.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that one little thing for just a minute. How do you get around procrastinating? Now, I have a little sign on my desk. I can't reach it from here, but it says the top 10 reasons I procrastinate. One, period. Thank you. Yes. And I've used it over the years as sort of a gauge of how tightly somebody is wrapped when they're in my office about their finances. In other words, if they look at it, because they usually do, they'll glance over at that sign and they're talking to me and they look at the sign, they talk and they look at the sign. If they start to laugh right away, then I know, okay, this is easy. These people have a sense of humor about their money.
Mm-hmm.
They're
going
to be okay. But most of the time, people will look at it and they won't laugh until about halfway through the meeting or at the end of the meeting. And I know that that's because they're just not processing it. They're having a quiz.
Mm-hmm.
Top 10 reasons I procrastinate. What's she going to ask me? What's number two? I don't know.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah. For me with the quiz, I was thinking like the terms, because I will say since we started doing the show together, when we first started, like I didn't really know the difference between an annuity and a CD. So there are so many terms with finances.
Oh, yeah.
So that's what I was thinking along the lines of a literacy quiz.
Yeah, it's financial jargon. This stat actually surprised me. 40% of Americans have no idea what a 401k is.
Mm.
Now, that's a pretty vague comment, but that's how it was listed in the article. I think, you know, they probably don't know how it works.
Mm-hmm.
They've heard of them. They may not have one. 40%. I would have thought, okay, everybody knows what a 401k is.
Right.
But I'll tell you, there are so many plans. You can have a 401k, a 457, a 403b, a 401a. You can have a self-directed IRA. I mean, the list goes on, a solo 401k, whatever. You can have all kinds of plans that sound like they work like a 401k, but they all have their own little rules.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what do I always tell you? I always tell you how to fix it, right? So these are all the things we're afraid of, cause us to procrastinate, feel like we're not as good at money as somebody else that we know, hide it from our partner, whatever. I think there was something like, I'll give you the stat when we come back, but something like more than half of the people said that finances have a negative effect on their relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it works its way into there too. So one of the things you can do is don't pick the thing you're the most frightened of. Right. Let's not whack it with a club. Let's just poke it a little with a stick.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Pick something that's a little scary. Like, oh, I don't know. I don't open my mail. All right. Now,
right.
For some people, I don't open my mail is the scariest thing. And for others, it's just like, you know, I could probably get better at that.
Mm-hmm.
I could probably fix that. And so I'll take that one item. Here's what you do. If you're afraid to go to the mailbox and open your mail, maybe you don't do it every day. Maybe you do it every couple of days,
mm-hmm.
right? But come up with a plan that is comfortable for you. And then here's my rule. Touch it once. Don't open it up, put it to the side, decide you'll look at it later, push it around your desk, come back a week later, because you know what's going to happen? That thing you were afraid of will happen.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that you are afraid that you are going to have a late fee or a delinquency notice, the longer you wait, the more likely that is to happen. So this is like ripping off the Band-Aid,
mm-hmm.
okay? If you're afraid to get your mail, decide, I'm going to get it 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday, Saturday, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Do that and do it at a time when you can say, okay, I'm going to get the mail. Maybe you have to put a little special thing on your desk to remind you or whatever, or some treat yourself to some happy thing. I'm going to get the mail after I have my coffee and biscotti, whatever it is, coffee and Cheerios, I don't care. But decide you're going to get the mail and then bring it in. Sit in a place that feels good to you. Don't make it so miserable. Don't, you mm-hmm. know, we do these awful things to ourselves, Jess, not just about finance, about everything, you know?
Yeah, the anticipation and the dread kind of builds up, and that's worse than probably the actual thing.
It is. And so, you know, just, and take this in small bites. Say to yourself, I'm going to try this for 2 weeks mm-hmm. and see mm-hmm. how it goes. I'm just going to promise myself I'm going to do this small thing for 2 weeks and see how it goes. And if I'm doing well, if it feels good and that improved it, then I'm going to pick the next thing.
Yeah.
And we can talk about what some of the next things are. But don't start off by saying, I have to figure out my retirement.
That's kind of a big bite to chomp off.
Yeah. Do it in little bits so that you work up your, it's the same thing as, so I'm a vocalist, right? Mm-hmm. And people always say to me, well, you don't look nervous on stage. Yeah, I don't. First of all, you know, I started off doing it when I was nervous, mm-hmm. but I would kind of fake my way through it. And I knew I was nervous, but maybe other people didn't. Mm-hmm. But the only way to get by that is to do it over and over and over again. And believe me, it's painful for a while, but yeah. then it starts to get to be fun, mm-hmm. actually fun. If you can imagine going to your mailbox, getting your mail and actually not being miserable about it, actually having fun, then believe it or not, you can get there.
Yeah. Because if you're going and you're expecting a late fee, I don't think that's ever going to be fun. But I guess if you do it often enough, get on top of it, you won't have late fees.
Well, that's true. And you know what? You might have a late fee. But what's going to change if you don't get your mail? Is it going to get better on its own?
I think
who's going to do those dishes?
Yeah. I think you just push it out of your mind. Like, I don't have to deal with it today, but I'll handle it tomorrow. And then tomorrow yeah. and tomorrow, it gets really easy to put it off.
And usually what happens is when people are doing that, they're rewarding themselves in other ways to make themselves feel better. Mm-hmm. So they say, I know that mailbox is ugly. I don't want to go there. I'll deal with it tomorrow. Today, I'm going to go get a latte, you know, and it just makes things worse. So yeah. I know you don't want to do it. I mean, nobody wants to, you know, go to the dentist or what. Nobody wants to do these things, mm-hmm. but leaving them undone is worse. And I promise you, if you will just do some of these small things a little bit at a time and just give yourself a gut check. I don't care if you keep a diary. Okay. Day one, it was really hard to go to the mailbox. Mm-hmm. Day two, it was hard, but I did it. Day three, maybe I procrastinated. I didn't do it at all. Shame on me. I'll get back on it the next day. And the next day you get it and you say, I actually did this. I went to the mailbox. I opened it up. Yeah, the news wasn't great, but at least I knew it.
Yeah.
The fear of the unknown is much worse than whatever's in your mailbox. And if you have something really scary in your mailbox, call us and we'll help you with it. Even if it's not scary, we'll help you with it, right? But the fear of the unknown is always worse than the actual act.
We're going to talk more about this coming up, but I do want to get your phone number.
Sure. You can reach us at 413-773-3333.
Or you can go to hugyourmoney.com. We'll be back with part two of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram, right here on WHMP.
When it comes to investing, we're taught the higher the risk, the better the reward. Francis Ram, the Money Doctor, says it isn't necessarily true. We need to remember that with risk comes the potential for losses, and making up losses can set us back or worse, delay our retirement. You've heard the testimonials for years about how her patented program helps people become 100% debt-free far ahead of schedule. But did you know that for more than 35 years, Dr. Ram has been helping people retire well without unnecessary risk? Dr. Ram says most people mistakenly accept that in order to earn attractive interest rates, they must tolerate risk, and that choosing safety means settling for lackluster returns. But it doesn't have to be that way. You can earn competitive rates and minimize taxes without risking a single dollar of your hard-earned savings. Contact the Money Doctor at Hug Your Money for a free consultation. Call 413-773-3333 or visit hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hi. I promised you a stat when we came back about relationships.
Okay, let's hear.
So 39% admit that finances have a negative effect on their relationship. Mm-hmm. And 63% agreed that learning it together could vastly improve. their relationship.
Yeah.
Learning about finances together.
That makes sense because I don't think anybody comes into a relationship with perfectly aligned thoughts on money. You know, there's the people that are like, one's a spender, one's a saver. That's horrible. But even the ones that are on the same wavelength, I'm sure there's a few things they disagree on.
Oh, you think?
You deal with this every day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, just when I think I've heard every story, I get another one. But sometimes people will call me and I always say I want to see both people together, unless there's some extenuating circumstance. Right. And sometimes people will kind of hedge around it like, well, you know, my husband works a lot or my wife is, it's really hard for her to come to an appointment. And eventually they might tell me why. Mm-hmm. And it could be anything from, look, we're really fighting about it and that's unpleasant. And I just have to get my head together before I can do this as a couple.
Right.
To, I think I'm leaving my spouse and I need to know how my finances will play out. What can I learn? You know, because I'm afraid I won't be able to land on my feet or my spouse is leaving me. Or even, geez, I racked up a bunch of credit card debt and I never told my partner. And now it's really coming due. Yeah. So you hear things like that. But other times it's just things like, well, I really want to retire and I think I have enough money to do it, but my wife wants me to keep working or my husband wants me to keep working or my partner says I'm going to retire and die and I don't want to have that conversation. I just want to retire, you know, and there are lots of reasons why it's difficult for couples to discuss this stuff. But I will tell you that it gets much easier when you involve an objective third party financial coach.
Mm-hmm.
I will give you tough love if I think you need it, but I use it pretty sparingly,
yeah.
You know. I mean, I've had couples where, you know, one of them is verbally abusive to the other in front of me in the meeting.
That's
awkward.
And
I've had to say, okay, I'm sorry, but you can't do that here.
Yeah.
You know, this is my turf, my rules, you know, I think what you mean to say is,
yeah.
Or a better way to say that might be, or let me paraphrase if I understand what's going on here. And so you can iron it out. But a lot of times people are really pretty abusive, even subtly verbally abusive, like and to themselves.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you the number of times I've had to say to people, okay, let's change your conversation you're having with yourself about money. Because I'm saying, well, let's do this. Oh, I'm really bad at that.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, no. You used to be really bad at that, but now you're trying to change.
Yeah.
Now you're trying to get better at it. So now you say to yourself, wow, okay, what does a new self do with money? The new self says I sit down and I work on this thing, right?
Yeah.
The old self says I'm really bad at that and I ignore it.
Mm-hmm.
And people pick that up. They really do. 35%, going back to my stats here, don't know what interest is in a financial context. Mm-hmm. I'm astonished that people answered that way, but they did. 30% didn't think they could win a game of financial trivia. I thought that was low. I think a lot more people than that would say, I'm not winning a game of financial trivia, depending on how
hard it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's this overall lack of confidence. So the top reasons for procrastinating, 25% said, all together now, stress, right? And 16% said, I don't look at it because I don't think it can get any worse. So who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then 13% just say, I don't know, I forget to do it. It's just forgetfulness. That's not 100%. So we don't know what the rest of them say
they couldn't bother to fill out the list. That's what happened.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. They could.
They procrastinated too much.
They're still working on it. It'll get done someday.
The deadline came and went, but they didn't even see it.
I love it. Oh boy. Let's see. The average American checks their banking app twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
Yet 50% say they're nervous when they open their banking app.
Mm.
You talk about a slow torture. Let me get this straight. You're really nervous when you open your banking app, but you're doing it twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
And you won't go get your mail? Yeah. Pick the less scary thing and do that, okay?
Right.
If the less scary thing is to start a jar and throw coins into it, start there.
Mm-hmm.
But pick something you have a little fear of. Don't say, well, okay, like for New Year's resolutions, I said I was going to gain weight and stop smoking.
Things you wanted to do.
Well, I never smoked, so that was really easy to me. And gaining weight was probably an inevitable. So I said, those are the two things I'll do for New Year's resolutions.
Yeah.
Okay, so be tougher on yourself than I was. Yeah, Generation Z, most uncomfortable at opening their banking app, 65%. Mm-hmm. And baby boomers, 26%. Yet they're opening it twice a day on average. What that tells me is they're really worried about their balances mm-hmm. or what's going on with their banking app, right? And it also tells me the banking industry has been able to gamify your money a bit in a way that's causing people to look at it all the time.
Right.
When it comes to budgeting, that terrible word, that awful word that nobody wants to do, which is why we don't ask people to build a budget. We ask them to track their expenses mm-hmm. and then we help with the budget, right? Because a budget shouldn't be this little box that you have to live in. It should be a flexible, fluid thing. But when it comes to budgeting, here's my point, 81%, both baby boomers and millennials mm-hmm. try to make a budget. They try to limit themselves on their spending. 81% give yeah. it their best shot. 34% fail at it. Mm-hmm. Only 66% stick to it on average. So baby boomers stick about 76% of the time, with Generation Zers at about 42%.
Yeah, I wonder how much it is of whether they stick to it or whether, as we've talked about on a bunch of shows, prices are so high now that what you're bringing in isn't covering your expenses, and that's why you're not sticking to it. Not, you know, from going out and spending a bunch of money on other things.
Well, that is actually the point of having a budget that is flexible. Mm-hmm. Because when prices go up, rather than saying, oh my gosh, I can't stick to my budget, which was a rigid number I put down the bottom line when I got it done once right. and for all, I checked right. the box, right? Rather than doing that, as the prices are going up, if you're tracking your expenses, you start to see it and you say, oh geez, I had a $100 deficit this month. Prices are going up. Where mm-hmm. am I going to make up for that?
Yeah.
Instead of landing someplace where you say, well, I have $5,000 on a credit card because prices went up and I couldn't afford it. Mm-hmm. You know, whenever I don't really care what went on somebody's credit card. You know, when they come to see me or we have a Zoom meeting, they always think I'm going to be really judgmental. Mm-hmm. And they try to tell me right away, well, I only have this credit card because I was going just fine. And then, you know,
yeah.
there's always this long explanation. And I sort of cut them off like, okay, unless it's from an obsessive shopping disorder, compulsive shopping disorder, or unless it's from something that's going to continue, then I just call it so what? Mm-hmm. That's just, yeah. I mean, of course you have this stuff.
I think that is a fear, though, like you were saying, it's with any professional. Like when you go into a dentist, you don't want to tell them how much you're going to you feel like you're going to get lectured.
No, there's no point.
Yeah.
It's not fruitful, and it certainly doesn't feel good, mm-hmm. and it won't get the result we're looking for, which is for people to warm up to the idea of, hey, I can do this. Mm-hmm. This isn't it. You know what the real shame is? I remember in the fourth grade, we had a teacher that taught us how to write a check. And I remember going home and telling my mother, the teacher taught us how to write a check today. Mm-hmm. And they thought that was the strangest thing. You know, like in the fourth grade, they taught you how to write a check.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it was a math teacher. And so she used that as a way to teach us how to balance a check statement, a mm-hmm. checking account.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
in the fourth grade, we could balance a checking account mm-hmm. because it's addition and subtraction. It wasn't that hard. Right.
Yeah.
So that became not a scary thing to me in my life. Mm-hmm. But we don't give kids this any longer.
I'm curious.
We don't give adults this.
I'm curious with literacy. It's literacy month for April, you said, right? Do they do anything in the schools with that? Do you know?
Some schools do.
Yeah.
Some schools really will do that. But I think it's a little too late. Mm-hmm. Better than never.
Yeah.
But so there's a great example of how technology can help us a lot, and it can also hinder us. So a lot of people don't have to balance a checkbook anymore.
Yep.
Because they get an e-statement, they import it into QuickBooks, and QuickBooks, they go click, 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 click. Oh, look, I'm off somewhere. Oh, I'll just make an adjustment and mm-hmm. move on.
Yeah.
Or they go find it, but they don't really have to understand why it's happening. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, when you used to do it on ledger sheets and things like that, it was very helpful. So I think we are missing some basic things. You know, when it comes to saving money, for instance, you know, mm-hmm. how do we teach kids how to save? And there's a whole chapter of this about this in the book about having them split it into four pieces so that they can get replaced later on with things like taxes, right? Mm-hmm. And so you can learn about that. But so in this survey, 53% save money by buying on sale items. Mm-hmm. Now, this reminds me of the comedian who said, my wife saves me money buying stuff. Honey, look at these great towels I bought that we didn't need. I saved $50 buying them, you know?
Yeah.
So I love that. 53% save money by buying on sale items. Now I understand what they mean, but still that can get out of hand. Mm-hmm. 47% by using coupons or discount codes. 45% by limiting spending on clothing. 42% by shopping at discount stores. Mm-hmm. Then people got serious about it and said, many people get more drastic, and they say they limit their social outings to bars and restaurants at 39%. And at 36%, they limit travel or they don't travel at all.
Mm-hmm.
These are areas that people expect me to tell them when we're working on things. You can't do that.
Right.
I don't want you to take a vacation. I just can't say it enough. It isn't useful. It isn't going to work. If I tell you not to take a vacation, first of all, you won't do any of the things I'm asking you to do because you'll take the vacation instead.
Yeah.
And secondly, I haven't really helped you manage your finance. Managing money means finding a way to have enough money to make those payments, whether it's the monthly payments that come in or whether it's overcharge fees that you're getting on your checking account, being able to correct that so you don't get them in the future, buying a car, taking a vacation. These are all real life things. And every time I ask somebody to do a budget, they often will come back and say, well, you know, we did the month, but it wasn't real life because we took a vacation. It wasn't real life because it was the holidays. You're never going to have a holiday or take a vacation again?
Yeah.
That is real. We just need to divide the expense by 12 or 6 or 3 or however often you take those, have those expenses. The closing thoughts on this really is we can do this together. You can do it alone if you want to, but it's harder.
Yeah.
But it's just a matter of taking a step at a time, and you don't have to go sign up for a course in macroeconomics, right? You just have to say, I need to learn how other people have done this. What works for them? Because the person with a lot of money telling you how to manage your money when you have none,
it's not going to work.
It's not going to happen.
I will say, too, if you're with a couple, too, where you can be telling your spouse one thing and they're not hearing you, but if they go to a separate person like you, you could say the same exact thing and they're going to hear it.
Yeah, it's true. It may be that I say it in a different way. It may be that I have the credentials and the trust to get that point across. But also, I tend not to muddy the waters with a lot of other stuff. That's the point of working with a coach. You're not patching a tire. You're wanting to get something that you can use that is flexible, that grows with you. And the more you work it, the more it works for you. And that's why, you know, we handle the debt, the budget, the retirement planning, all in one place so that you don't have to feel overwhelmed by it. We just take it a step at a time, depending on what where your starting point is. And then we go from there. Yeah.
Well, how can people get a hold of you?
Well, they can reach us at 413-773-3333. Or visit us on the web, of course, at hugyourmoney.com. And you promised me more questions. Do we have a question show coming up?
Yes.
Questions?
Maybe we'll do it next week. Yeah, I love the question shows because, as we say, you know none of the questions ahead of time, so you just kind of get them thrown at you.
I always love that. And people write really interesting questions, sometimes very complex, sometimes simple.
All right, that is awesome. So look forward to that next Saturday right here on Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram on WHMP.
Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to GetTheTea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's GetTheTea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. GetTheTea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
Oh, I was a mess when I started. I was confused. I didn't know where to start. I had no direction. I thought it was about refinancing and putting all my debt together, but it's not. And seeing the plan, I thought, oh my gosh, I can do this. I'm so comfortable with where my finances are going and confident. You know, I'm decreasing my debt, I'm increasing my income, and seeing the plan was the motivation to pull it all together.
Hug works best when we work together. Schedule your free consultation with a Hug Your Money coach today. Visit hugyourmoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.
Financial literacy and the human condition. Welcome to Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Rayum.
Welcome to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler, along with the money doctor, Dr. Francis Ram. Hi.
Hey, Jess. How are you this morning?
I'm good. This was the dreaded tax week.
Oh, every year, right? Yeah, yeah, it's true. And, you know, you see ads on the TV about identity theft protection and tax identity fraud. And what is that? And I've had calls already this year. I can't believe it, but calls already this year from people who couldn't file their tax return or who got erroneous information asking them for their personal information or their financial information, saying they were from the IRS. You would think if you're a scam artist, you might take on somebody other than the IRS.
Yeah, but that's not a good adversary, I wouldn't think.
Well, it's not where I would go, yeah. But if I were a fraudulent person, I guess. But interestingly enough, maybe some of the reason that people are looking at this and creating more and more fraud is that, you know, the IRS used to resolve these cases in about 120 days.
Mm-hmm.
But since the pandemic, when fraudsters had nothing to do but sit home and try and get your tax refund from you, guess how long it's taking them now? Just take a stab.
A year.
650 days on average.
Wow. So almost 2 years.
650 days. They're working to get it back to 120 days, but they're just overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. And what that tells me is people are falling prey to it. Otherwise, they wouldn't be overwhelmed. People would just say, oh, you know, I didn't file that tax return, and that would be it. But in the case of the IRS, it isn't like saying, it's not like calling your bank up and saying, I didn't make that charge, or your credit card company, I didn't make that charge. Okay, that's it. We'll stamp your account and you'll be done. You're not responsible for it. With identity theft tax fraud, what happens is somebody steals your personal information, your name, your address, and your social security number. Mm-hmm. And let's face it. Let's face it. It's out there everywhere.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you can say, I don't want to give up my social security number. But for those of us old enough to remember when it was on our driver's license, we know it's everywhere. So they get your information and they file a tax refund, a tax report. Well, why wouldn't they file your taxes? They're asking for a refund.
How are they setting this up, though? They're setting it up where it goes to where the refund would go to their account.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then I'm assuming so that these are accounts that kind of go away quickly so they can't be traced, or how does that work?
One would assume.
Yeah.
So I always
get
nervous when I'm talking about fraud on the air because it drives me crazy when I see people telling them how it works. Why don't we just give them a playbook, folks? Here's how to build a bomb with parts you buy on the internet, you know? So let's not tell them exactly how it works.
Okay.
But what I
okay.
do care about is how to protect yourself from it and what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And how you're even going to know that somebody did this.
Yeah.
How do you know if somebody,
I would assume you wouldn't find out until you just didn't get your return back, right?
Almost. You might find out very early. You might be trying to e-file. And if you're trying to e-file and it comes up as you can't because it's a duplicate social security number.
Then you kind of have
I'm reminded of that. I'm reminded of the redneck. You might be a redneck if, right? I mean, the comedian, you might be a redneck if.
Jeff Fox.
Yes, if you can't file your tax return by e-file because it says you have a duplicate social security number, you might be an identity tax fraud victim.
Mm.
You might have gotten a letter from the IRS that said that they're wondering if they've got a return in and they're wondering if it's really you that filed it because there's something that seems suspicious about it.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be some things like that happen. Of course, you might file successfully and be wondering where your refund is and contact them. And they say, oh, well, we sent your refund somewhere else. The two people that I've had ask me about it in the last week and a half, two people in a week and a half is a lot in a practice our size, right? To be falling prey to this. They both said that they went to file their returns. One was at, I think, an H&R Block and the other was at another private accountant firm. And they couldn't file. When they put the return into the system, it was rejected. Because there was a social security number duplication where the return had already been filed.
I can imagine it's nightmare to get that fixed.
It is a complete nightmare, I think. You know, there's what will happen is the IRS will ask you to fill out a form 14039 or 14039B because they all have lovely numbers like that. And that's tagging your account as an identity theft victim, right? It says, here's my affidavit. It's an affidavit. It says, here's my affidavit that I did not file that fraudulent return that you have in your hands. Please fix this.
Mm-hmm.
And then they will connect you with an identity theft organization who have specially trained employees who will help you unravel this, right? Resolve this matter. And so if first thing you'll have to do is verify your information, right? They're not going to do anything if you just contact the IRS and say, I didn't make that tax return. It's really me now, because they don't know the difference between whether it was really you the first time or it's really you now, until you verify your information. And that might require having a photo ID, a copy of the letter, your last year's tax return, if you filed one, and the return in order that's in question, right? Is this your, here's the return I'm saying I filed. What do you have in your hands? You know, no, that's not me. I didn't have an account in Colorado. Or what do you mean you're processing my refund and I'm out of the country? No, it's not me. I'm really here.
Is this something that you can do over the phone, or should you go into an office? Because I can imagine if you've already gotten your identity stolen, you're going to feel a little nervous about giving that info out over the phone.
Yeah, it could happen either way. You may be able to do it online or with an IRS agent, or they may, if under certain suspicious circumstances, particularly if you can't verify quickly with the information they're asking you for, they'll ask you to go into a center in person and verify there. And there they'll make you bring a picture ID and some other things to identify yourself. So once you've verified yourself, now you can tell them, finally, you can tell them, yes, I made this, I filed this return, or no, I didn't file this return. If you did file the return, let's say you got a letter from the IRS and it said, we have a return in hand and we think it's suspicious. Mm-hmm. It might be for a number of reasons. Maybe you've changed an address. Maybe something didn't match up with their records, but they might think it's suspicious and they've contacted you. Then if it is you and you can verify yourself and say, yes, I've done this, then they can say, okay, we're going to continue to process your return. But if it's not you, then they're going to take a number of steps. They're going to mark your account as identity theft for an identity theft victim. They're going to ask you to fill out that 14039 or 14039B fraud affidavit. Mm-hmm. They're going to try and unravel where this return came from and attack the bad guys if they can. And they're going to help you file your correct return safely, right? So that's what they're looking to do, and get your refund if you're due a refund.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so if they have not tracked down the money, because we know that these hackers move quickly, do you have to wait till they get your money back, or they have a system where you will get paid because it wasn't you, and then they recover that separately?
Yeah, I think that you get paid, and then they recover it separately. But I don't have the specific details of what the IRS, how the IRS works, in part because it's taking them almost 2 years to unravel this. So the cases that I know of personally, the people were caught in time because they couldn't file their return because somebody else had already filed with their information.
It would be a nightmare if this happened and you had to wait the 2 years that it's taking them to unravel it to even see anything, especially if you were due money back.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's really scary. But getting the refund, believe it or not, is the smallest of people's problems. Mm-hmm. When you know that your identity has been stolen and it's been used to file a tax return with the hopes of getting your refund, when somebody's that bold and they've got your information,
they've probably already opened credit cards and everything else. Yeah,
it's really scary, you know, what you can do about it. And we'll talk about all the things you can do to protect yourself from this. But basically, once you notify the IRS, they're going to put people on it and say, okay, now we have to figure out, is it just this tax year or is it multiple tax years? Mm-hmm. Oh. Is it just you? Oh, yeah. Oh, it could be really big, right? It could be going back for years. And you maybe, let's say you didn't earn enough money to file. Mm-hmm. Let's say you just said, I don't have to file my return.
Okay.
But somebody else did. You might not discover it for years. Mm-hmm. Until you finally made enough money to file a return. And there's a lot of people out there who don't have to file, especially retirees, right? They are under an income level, whatever.
Right.
So finally something happens, they get a big windfall and they file a return and this mess starts to happen. I can't get your refund for you because there's a fraudulent case, right? Mm-hmm. And now the IRS is looking at how many years did it go back and they've got to unravel that. It also could include more people than just you. Maybe there are other people named on the tax return. Maybe there's a spouse or somebody else named on that tax return. And so they have to try to figure that out. And is that person real or not? in the case of some couples who might be estranged, let's say, right? Maybe one person has all that information on the other person and they're filing tax returns because they know the other person doesn't need to file and they're collecting their refunds. So half of the information on the return might be legitimate and the other half might not. So what a disaster to try to sort this out. And what are the kinds of things you can do, which we will. I'll give people a roadmap to this about where you can go for help and what you can do. But there is definitely help ready for you, both at the IRS and at the state level. But, you know, the first place to start with this sort of thing, I think, is to really use best practices and anti-theft software on your computer and just be cautious about how you're doing things. And for those people out there who are old school and who are saying, you see, that's why I never e-file. I always send my return in by paper. You know what? I'm going to give you a nod on this one. Personally, I actually e-file, but I have great identity theft protection, right? And that's what you want to have in place. But if you're nervous about this at all, send it in by paper. What's the harm in doing that? Other than, you know, you got to get it stamped on time, right? So yeah, scary thing. And it's in the news a lot right now. So I thought we should talk about it. And in the second half, we'll talk about all the steps that people can take to protect themselves and where they can go to get help.
Okay, yeah. Let's get your phone number first.
Sure, it's 413-773-3333.
And you can also go to info@hugyourmoney.com. Check that out there. We'll be right back with the second half of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, right here on WHMP.
When it comes to investing, we're taught the higher the risk, the better the reward. Frances Ram, the Money Doctor, says it isn't necessarily true. We need to remember that with risk comes the potential for losses, and making up losses can set us back, or worse, delay our retirement. You've heard the testimonials for years about how her patented program helps people become 100% debt-free far ahead of schedule. But did you know that for more than 35 years, Dr. Ram has been helping people retire well without unnecessary risk? Dr. Ram says most people mistakenly accept that in order to earn attractive interest rates, they must tolerate risk, and that choosing safety means settling for lackluster returns. But it doesn't have to be that way. You can earn competitive rates and minimize taxes without risking a single dollar of your hard-earned savings. Contact the Money Doctor at Hug Your Money for a free consultation. Call 413-773-3333 or visit hugyourmoney.com.
Welcome back to Financial Fitness. I'm Jess Tyler along with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram. Hi.
Got your tax refund yet?
I mean, we're talking about two things that are not that great. Already, if it's tax week for you, that means that you waited to the last minute. So you've been putting it off.
Yes.
And then on top of that, we're talking about somebody maybe filing fraudulently in your place, which just seems like a complete nightmare if that happens.
Yeah, I think that it is. I mean, I know that a lot of people who wait till the last minute are not expecting a refund. They wait till the last minute because they know they're going to have to pay. But when you've waited to the last minute and you log in and you try to e-file your return, and it's, you know, I don't know, 11:30 on the night before, and you're there ready to push the button, and you push the button and it says you can't file your return.
Right.
There's some reason you can't do it. They can't verify your identity. There's been an additional return already filed with your social security number. What are you going to do? So yes, you have to contact the IRS right away. But once you file that form that we talked about, that affidavit that says, I didn't file this return, this 14039 form or 14039B, what do you do? It's going to take 650 days on average for the IRS to sort this out now. Used to be 120 days. Pandemic put us there. And we're trying to get back to 120 days for the IRS to resolve these matters. But even 120 days is still a long time for you to say, what am I going to do about my tax refund?
Right.
So the first thing you absolutely have to do is you have to file your return. If you have to put it in paper, in the mail, so be it. But file your regular return, even if you can't file online. Okay. And continue to pay your taxes as you normally would. I know it's scary when somebody else has your identity, but the IRS expects that you will just continue business as usual and that you'll trust that they'll
sort it out. Yeah. Okay.
Quickly, right?
You couldn't get through that sentence.
Yeah. So, you know, some of the ways that people find out about this is not just that you can't file your return. You might get a transcript in the mail from the IRS. Here's a transcript of a phone conversation we had. You didn't request it. You might get an online notice that an account has been created in your name mm-hmm. and you didn't create one, or that your account has been disabled and you didn't disable it.
So these are all red flags.
These are immediate. You have to wonder, has something been done? You might get a notice that there's been an additional tax or refund, that additional tax that you owe or a refund that you're due when you don't think that there is, mm-hmm. or there might be a collection action on a year you didn't file. So you get scary letters from the IRS that say things like, you know, we're trying to collect these taxes from you. And you're saying, wait a minute, did I even file a return for that year?
Yeah. Let's flash back for one second to the form, the 1049AB. I probably got 14. That all wrong. You know what I'm saying.
14039, yes.
I have had the pleasure of calling the IRS before for a tax issue. It's not quick. Yeah. Is there a quick way to get this form? Because normally it's so backed up now to call anyway. Then you're put on hold. Then you got to go, you know how it is.
I do. It feels like 650 days to be on hold.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you got to call on the right day and everything else. So is there a quick way?
And is there anything worse than having to listen to that recording and over again, or that, or the bad music, right?
Yeah. The worst is you get partway through the thing and then you get disconnected somehow and you have to start again.
Oh my gosh. It's so common. And you mm-hmm. wait and you wait like an hour and then click, you know, or you get, thank you for calling, and they hang up on you, or they transfer you and there's just dead air and mm-hmm. you don't know whether there's really a person there or not. I could go on and on about the headaches of this, but for anybody who has ever called, not just the IRS, anybody
anywhere.
Who's ever called someplace. Yeah. These days, terrible. So yes, you may be able to fill it out online.
Okay.
We hope.
Maybe we just saved somebody an hour on hold. So I feel good about that.
Oh my gosh. I hope so. Yeah. Thank you very much for mentioning that. Absolutely. And, you know, in addition to the kinds of things that we talked about where, you know, an individual might get hit by this and become a victim, companies can do it too. You know, one of the ways that you might realize that you're an identity tax fraud victim mm-hmm. is that you might get notice that you've created an EIN, an employee identification number, that you didn't ask for or that isn't yours, and suddenly your name is attached to it. So if anything like this happens, you really want to check with the IRS. Now, the IRS, the state, and the tax industry work together in cooperation under something called the Security Summit to protect your information going forward. So, you know, I don't know, that sounds like a nice thing to do, to go to the Security Summit, but I don't think you really want to find yourself there if you don't have to.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the IRS will never, these are the things that you need to know to protect yourself. The IRS will never initiate contact with you through text, phone, email, social media. If the IRS has a problem with you, they will send you a letter. Done deal. That's it. So be aware of phishing scams with a PH, right? Be aware of phishing scams. Oh, the other thing they won't do that is really, really gets people, and right now I'm hearing, you know, murmurs of this, is they'll get a phone call. People will get a phone call mm-hmm. with a threat of a lawsuit. And it's always scary. I'm calling you from the IRS and we have your return in our hand. And if you don't pay up, or we have questions, we're coming to your house to discuss them, right? You know, phone calls, right? Oh, you don't want us to come to your house? Well, here's what you can do. Just send the money in to resolve this. Mm-hmm. And here, let me tell you where to send it. And it'll be someplace that sounds legit and isn't. Somebody might call you and say they're working with the IRS. They're part of an organization that has been hired by the IRS. Mm-hmm. They're working with them and they just want you to help them. The IRS may be the one to tell you that they have the return in their hand that's suspicious. Mm-hmm. And if they do, it's probably more quickly resolved than if you tell them that you think there's a suspicious return filed. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I think a lot of the times it's people that realize, as we've said, that there's a suspicious return that's been filed and what can they do about it?
Yeah. I know we've talked about this before, and we've talked on a previous show about this, but I was wondering if we could just maybe get like a little refresher. Like, we're talking about this and specifically having to do with the tax return, but we talk all the time about these fraudsters doing all this stuff. And I just heard a news story recently, and I hear these all the time, about AT&T customers getting breached. So when we have to do regular business, like have a phone service or all these other places that this has happened to, how do we protect ourselves in those cases?
You know, it isn't even that you've given up your Social Security. Some of these fraudsters will get a fresh Social Security number on a child mm-hmm. that's been born and you haven't registered for a Social Security number yet. And they've got 18 years to use their kid's credit before you're going to discover it when they go to get a car loan or something. So how do you protect yourself from it? There are identity theft companies that claim to protect your identity. I'm not going to say they can't do it. But what I tell people is the most important part about protecting yourself is putting that lock on your credit reports so people can't take out loans in your name. Mm-hmm. That's where it gets really ugly. It's one thing to tell the IRS, hey, somebody's trying to get my refund. It's another to try to prove that you didn't take out a mortgage when they've got a signature and all your information on their paper.
Right.
So to do that, I ask people to put a fraud alert on their credit reports or a freeze on their credit reports. You could do either. I recommend a freeze if you think you've been a victim of identity theft. And that just locks down all your credit reports. And you can go to Equifax.com and be able to do it there. TransUnion, Experian, those are the three largest ones. And you can get, you can just put a block on your credit report. Now you can unlock that anytime you want. Let's say you want to go buy a car and they need to check your credit. You can just unlock it through your phone or mm-hmm. with a phone call, and then they can get your credit report. Then you just put the lock back on it again. But that will save you from a lot of headaches. In fact, one of the gentlemen that called me about the identity theft for tax reasons had not been told to lock down his credit report. And I was like, seriously? Mm-hmm. Somebody has filed a whole tax return in your name and nobody said, maybe you want to check your credit reports.
Yeah.
So I'm really shocked by that. And the problem is that credit reports take, 45 days before things cycle through. So you may not know. You can pull your credit report right now and it looks great. And 45, 60 days from now, it's got a new loan on it.
Right.
So check with that. Annualcreditreport.com is the place that I recommend that people go to get their credit reports. I think that's really important to realize and to recognize that you can do a lot of things to protect yourself. It might not protect a duplicate tax return, but you do what you can. Also, anti-theft software on your computer. If you're going to mm-hmm. shop on the internet, so here's a thing I don't think I've ever talked about on the air. And as you know, I don't usually recommend places. I'm sure there are a million like this, but I have used this many times personally to protect my own identity online. And it's called Email on Deck. Now, there's probably a bunch of these.
Okay.
But the way it works is you go there, you click a couple buttons to say that you're not a robot, mm-hmm. and they give you an email address. It's very temporary. It's only going to be alive for about 15 minutes. And you get this email address. And so you can use it when you're shopping somewhere, right? Hey, I'm, 123 at gmail.com. And use it to finish your order. You'll get your receipt at the fake email address, right? Because you'll be able to log right back into wherever it was, in this case, Email on Deck. Mm-hmm. Get the email, verify, they'll give you a code to verify it's you. You don't have to give out your legitimate email to do that. As long as you don't need this long term, you could use one of those fake email addresses. And I think there are services that create these email addresses as well automatically for you. I've gotten ads from them, So you can use that fake email address just to finish that transaction, and then poof, it's gone mm-hmm. in 15 minutes.
How much can you trust? When you're doing online shopping and you see different sites where they're like, we have secure payments, how much can you trust that? Is that just something that everyone says, kind of like it's fat-free, or is it something where there's some protection with it?
Well, the first thing to look for is in the address bar. Check and see if after HTTP, if there's the letter S.
Okay.
S is for secure.
Okay.
S is a secure. So that means they have an SSL certificate or a secure socket layer certificate. You got me into tech world now. So that means they have an SSL on it. So it's protected. If you go to our website, anytime we're asking for anything, and we don't even ask for a lot of sensitive information, you'll see that you're at an https://www address.
Okay.
And so that's the first thing to look for. Some companies will offer, security under, we have this badge of security or whatever. But I would say the very first thing is to look at that internet address bar, because if that's not secure, then any information you're sending through the internet is going wherever mm-hmm. the internet is going and whoever can intercept it. Now, it doesn't mean that when you land on their site, it has to be secure. But when you get to a place where you're putting in your credit card information or you're putting your personal information in, that part should absolutely be secure. Yeah.
Okay. Another quick question that I had for you, I don't know if this is a question or an observation, but I've seen this in just covering some news stories where family members will take your social security number and use it. And then that's probably a whole other nightmare that you've got to unravel, right? Because it's a family member with the same last name, but you didn't give permission. So that's got to be a nightmare as well.
Yeah. Well, I think emotionally that would be the worst, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's pretty bad to be violated by a stranger, but to have your return stolen from you by a family member, that's really weird. And I would hazard a guess that a lot of those don't get reported. that
yeah,
people
I've recently saw a story about it was parents that had done it. And when the girl was 18 and went to go get loans, she realized that her parents had wrecked her credit. And I think that they were good people, but they were financially sloppy and used that to kind of get by. And then they don't realize the damage that does to her starting out.
Oh, my gosh. That's a creepy one.
Yeah.
I would have. Yeah, that's really terrible. Well, I would say that, you know, the thing that you need to remember about unraveling this sort of thing is you could follow the IRS model, for instance. Once they get this resolved, then they tag your account as an identity theft victim. They put stronger security on things. Yes, you might have to file a paper return if you've not already filed your return. Mm-hmm. Yes, you might have to go into an office in person to prove it's you. But you know what? After they get this done, they'll process your return normally. You'll get your refund normally. And after all, this is for your protection.
Yeah.
So if it's a little bit of an inconvenience, you know, so be it. I mean, this probably the strongest thing that they do after they have figured out that you've been a victim of fraud is that in certain cases, certain identity theft victims will have to get a new annual six-digit PIN in order to file. Oh, okay. And the IRS will give it to you every year. So they're protecting you. Every year, the PIN is different.
That's another PIN I've got to remember.
Yeah, it's another PIN. They're terrible, all these things. But they are there for your protection.
Yeah.
And, you know, it is scary. I know there are people who say, I don't want a smartphone. I don't want to be on the internet. This is why. This is a big headache. You know what? They're right. It is. Mm-hmm. But it's a choice. And most of us don't really have the choice. Most of us are forced into, hey, if you aren't here, particularly those of us in business, if you aren't on the internet, if you don't have a website, if you don't do business digitally, you are going to be very limited.
Yeah.
Very limited.
Yeah. There's so many, things
you know,
my
hat's off to the small restaurants who still remain cash positive or cash only, you know, and they have their own problems too. But yeah, this is a bad one because it really makes a mess of your tax situation. And so I hope that this information is helpful to somebody. There are lots of things you can do to protect yourself, but there's a great list of them at irs.gov, which I would say it's a short read, but it's, you know, they've really got some concise things there with active links. You could just click on a link and read more about how to protect yourself.
Okay,
yeah,
perfect.
For sure.
Let's get your phone number if anybody has any questions or they have a tax problem.
Oh, dear.
I'm so kind.
Sympathy to you first, and yes, we would help you sort it out. Mm-hmm. They can reach us at 413-773-3333.
Or go to info@hugyourmoney.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jess.
We'll be back next week with another edition of Financial Fitness with the Money Doctor, Dr. Frances Ram, right here on WHMP.
Have you heard about Get the Tea? It's an online herbal supplement company with high quality standards. You cannot find these in stores. They carry cleansing teas and targeted herbal supplements for all your health needs. Go to getthetea.com today to order yours. Health shouldn't be put off. It should be a priority. And check out their specials page for sale items. That's getthetea.com. Enter code TEA123 for 10% off exclusively for my listeners. Getthetea.com, code TEA123. Order today.
This is Frances Rayum, the Money Doctor. Now you can become 100% debt-free, budget successfully, and retire well, all under the Hug Your Money umbrella.
He's not one to want anybody to know his business. Don't tell anybody about money. Don't say anything about money. But the bottom line is, because he had that secrecy from his youth, I felt like, who do I get help from? I have to tell somebody. Oh no, he'll be furious, so keep it to yourself, Jill.
That's very true. But as bad as it was getting, she told me about Hug Your Money. I said, you know, we need to do it. It was hard. It was hard because I said the same word all the time. I was embarrassed. We were just talking about that earlier today. I'm not embarrassed anymore. I'm relieved. I'm so happy. Today is wonderful.
Hug works best when we work together. Schedule your free consultation with a Hug Your Money coach today. Visit HugYourMoney.com. Hug Your Money. So unique, it's patented.